Welcome to Just a Taste. I'm Scott Curry with Chef's Best. We gather to talk about the trends in marketing, retail, and production in food and beverage that are shaping the industry. Joining us today is growth specialist Dayton Miller. Dayton is managing partner of Boulder Food Group. Previously, he co-founded Function, a venture-backed health and wellness beverage company, which Dayton built from conception to $20 million in retail sales until its acquisition. Prior to Function, Dayton was an executive in the strategy group at the Walt Disney Company, where he worked for over 7 years focusing on mergers and acquisitions and operating strategy. Dayton began his career as an analyst in investment banking and spent time as a management consultant for Bain & Company. Dayton serves on the board of directors for the Harvard Business School Alumni Association of Southern California and also serves on the leadership council of the Fulfillment Fund, an LA nonprofit focused on underprivileged youth in education. Dayton, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. So tell us about the Boulder Food Group and the mission of the organization, and share with our listeners as well how the group came together.
For sure. So Boulder Food Group is a venture capital firm that focuses exclusively on food, beverage, and dietary supplements. More specifically, within that that larger industry, we're focused on branded consumer packaged goods. So really any product that you might buy at a grocery store that is classified as a food, beverage, or dietary supplement is something that we would be interested in. We are what's considered an early stage investor. So that means we're typically the first institutional or professional investor involved in a business, but it's normally after a business has launched. There are a lot of wonderful creative food entrepreneurs out there, and my partner and I were previously of that ilk, and we now are being fortunate to provide capital and hopefully thoughtful strategic advice along with that capital to other food entrepreneurs in the market. BFG came to be. My partner and founder Tom Spear had spent about 15 years or so in the food industry. He was previously COO of Barenaga Granola, which exited to Kellogg's, and then was the CEO of Evolve Foods, which ultimately exited to Boulder Brands, which is now part of Pinnacle and Conagra. And from that, we were both fortunate to raise a venture in our previous lives as entrepreneurs and felt that we could bring something a little bit different to the table and hopefully help great entrepreneurs build cool businesses.
Certainly sounds like plenty of brain power and experience on the team there. You mentioned, kind of what some of those ideal companies that you're looking for, but expand on that. What would be the profile that you're looking for? Is it, I guess we could break it into maybe a few categories. One is, you mentioned health oriented. So if you could share what that means, and then what stage are you looking for? Obviously there's absolutely no shortage of individuals out there that are creating, their own quality food, whether it's a recipe in their kitchen or they've advanced beyond that to having some level of manufacturing. But what's kind of that ideal profile that you're looking for?
Sure. I'll maybe answer those in reverse order just because it's a little bit easier.
Sure.
But we definitely want products that are already on the market. So there's certainly a lot of great ideas and seed investments out there where it folks might be raising money in order to launch a product. That's not a fit for us. We're kind of the next stage after the product has launched. A lot of times that can be very quickly after the product launch if it's getting good traction. What we do internally is we are looking for brands that we believe have the ability to achieve $1 million in sales relatively quickly. So if they haven't already achieved $1 million in sales, then something that can achieve that level in the next 12 months would be ideal. The good thing is, I think the way the system is set up, you can really scale a food CPG business very efficiently, and it doesn't necessarily require a lot of capital. So that can actually happen a lot faster than maybe what a lot of folks might believe. From a from kind of a product standpoint, you know, we are looking for things that are considered quote unquote better for you. I think that can really take a pretty broad definition. I think 15 years ago, when we first started getting into this industry, something that was natural was considered better for you. And now I think you kind of have to, at the very least, you have to be all natural, normally or organic or non-GMO, just as kind of table stakes, so to speak. And then I think beyond that, there are obviously a lot of trends emerging and that have been around for the last 5 or so years that are really starting to kind of take hold more broadly. And I think that's, you know, things like plant-based and functional foods. You know, going back to it not being enough to be natural or organic, hopefully there's some ingredients in there that are doing something else, and consumers are kind of demanding more from their food. Things that are lower in sugar are normally interesting to us. You know, clearly that was demonized previously. Now it's kind of not so clear whether that was necessarily right. And I think folks are looking at sugar as one of the first things on the on a product nutrition facts panel when they turn a product over. So those are just some of the things that we're seeing. I think at the end of the day, it's consumer driven, and you know, thankfully we're all consumers of the category as well, and have families, and so you know, we're able to do our own little focus groups internally, and we do look at that as well.
So when an entrepreneur approaches you, I think to some extent it might be obvious what you are looking for, you know, leadership for, you know, passion from the entrepreneur, you know, perhaps some level of experience, everything. But to educate our audience, I'm curious what red flags you look for. What are the things that someone could come to you, and perhaps you even like the idea. I mean, obviously a bad idea is a red flag, but perhaps you like the idea, but what pitfall should an entrepreneur avoid, or what should they clean up or fix before approaching a venture capital organization like you? What are the types of things that you say, ooh, you know, maybe this balance sheet is a little upside down or whatnot. What are some of those red flags that you would share with an entrepreneur approaching a VC?
Sure. I think, you know, we really look at our investments as partnerships, and we know that as part of that, there's going to be great times and bad times. And hopefully we're the first call when things go right and go wrong. But I think along those lines, what we tend to give us a little bit of cause for pause is if there are unrealistic expectations in the business plan, because I think that's just kind of setting everything or setting the relationship up on the wrong foundation. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we know how hard it is to build these businesses. We know it takes time and capital. And so if there's unrealistic expectations, you know, that just kind of is a bit of a red flag. You know, we're also looking for real, authentic stories and kind of problem solvers versus folks who are kind of looking to build a business and exit in 3 years. We know, just having been entrepreneurs, how long some of those days are, and if you don't have an underlying motivation for launching this business, we find that it's a lot. Besides, you know, making money, we find that it can be a lot more challenging. And you know, consumers aren't stupid, especially these days. I think they can see through that kind of stuff. But if the entrepreneurs are solving a problem that came from their own lives, then that is something that we find really, really resonates with people. So one example of that is we were fortunate to back a brand called Cauli Power, which makes a cauliflower crust pizza company. Gail Becker, the founder and CEO, has two kids with celiac. They're in their late teens now, But growing up, they were never able to really eat off the same plate. And they would always say, like, you know, you can give us the gluten-free pizza, but please give our friends the quote-unquote normal pizza. And, you know, that combined with finding a way to get more veggies into her kids' lives and diet, she started creating cauliflower crust pizza and realized that it was a huge hassle, kind of call it 90 minutes to make it from scratch. And she just figured that if she was having this issue, there are probably others that were as well. And you know, the brand has really taken off and it's been a hit since then. So it's just a good example of an authentic story. Obviously, the opposite would be you know, some type of digital arbitrage situation where someone is you know, trying to perhaps resell products or you know, really make a fast dollar. And we just think that these businesses take a long time to build, and at the end of the day, you need to be authentic.
Switching gears a little bit to the industry itself, we talked to plenty of folks that I would say confirm that food and beverage is in a disruptive period. I know that this disruption is obviously you know, continuous, and it affects every industry all the time, but it really seems like some of the technologies and consumer behaviors that really influenced and disrupted other industries, you know, perhaps 5, 6, 7 years ago, are really catching up, if you will, to food and beverage. Speaking, of course, about, you know, digital online shopping habits and behaviors, the expectation of customization and, you know, on-demand type delivery. And it feels like, and certainly, you know, if you have a different perspective, share it. It feels like we're only in about the second inning here of disruption to the food and beverage industry. So I would, to apply that metaphor, I would say book sales is in the ninth inning, right? I mean, we're pretty much the ninth inning and maybe two outs on book sales. Whereas it feels like food and beverage, we're only in the second inning here. And that companies are looking to overcome some of the limitations exist relative to, refrigeration and stuff like that. How are you approaching your investments, and where do you see things going from here? Beyond the obvious, I join many folks that get pretty much weekly, at least monthly delivery from Amazon of a lot of our staples that go into the kids' lunches and stuff like that. But, you know, how shoppers, actually shop, with their smartphones in their pocket at retail. I think we're moving beyond an FSI world and perhaps even less focus on you know, where you are on the shelf, because, you know, there's influences coming from elsewhere. So I'm painting a broad brush here, but what are the factors that you're seeing in disruption of consumer behavior in the digital space, and how brands market, and how's that influencing you?
For sure. Well, I mean, I guess I would start with saying I totally agree with you in the sense that there's kind of disruption happening in every segment of the value chain with food and beverage. And I'm optimistic that we're still in the early innings as well. And I think there's a lot of data points that really show that. One of the more recent ones that we're really seeing as investors is how quickly the big box mass retailers like Walmart and Kroger are adapting and bringing in new brands that maybe years ago would have taken them 3 or 4 years. They now want to be a local partner to help launch in certain regions. And I think, you know, that's ultimately, again, being driven by the consumer, because they're starting to, change the way they eat. From a marketing standpoint, from the digital side specifically, clearly word of mouth spreads faster than ever before. I think from our standpoint, that really puts an increased emphasis on product differentiation and products that kind of speak for themselves. Because if you do have something that's really unique and different and does solve a real need in consumer lives, then there is kind of a natural growth curve that these brands will take. And we're almost believers that you can spend too much on marketing and kind of lose your authenticity and lose kind of that natural pull that you would be getting if you let the kind of product stand on their own. What's interesting is, I think across other segments of the value chain and supply chain specifically, it's candidly never been easier to launch a brand. You can get a website up, you can get a product on Amazon, and certainly easier to find suppliers, etc. Co-manufacturers where you just rent line time. So it's not like there's a ton of fixed costs like 20 years ago when you might be required to build a production facility and have a lot of fixed costs just to launch a product. At the same time, I think because it's never been easier to launch a brand, there's just so many brands out there. And so, in some regards, it's harder to build a really large brand. And so, the stats we kind of look at, I guess, which is why we ultimately come back to retail, at least today. I think it's roughly 5% of food that's bought online. We think that's a fabulous place to launch a brand, to get trial, to iterate quickly, to figure out your price pack architecture and your value proposition. But at least today, in order to build a big brand, we believe that you still need to be in retail. And that's obviously a different consideration set with respect to what the product looks like on shelf, being optimized for on shelf versus shipping, perhaps, and things along those lines. So, it's definitely a fluid world and one that we're trying to navigate. We do have two kind of strategic investments as a fund. One is in a business called Greenspoon Sales, which is a sales broker that helps brands get placements in places like Whole Foods or Target or Kroger, et cetera. And then we have another investment that's kind of the digital equivalent in a brand called, or a company called Cartograph, which is basically an Amazon sales and marketing specialist. And so they help optimize relationships with Amazon, advertising, fulfillment and sales, and really are kind of an outsourced arm for that. So I guess kind of going back to the point of you don't even need an internal digital salesperson anymore. You can work with companies like Cartograph to get started and put something up on Amazon and see if there's real pull for it. So it's certainly a lot changing, but it certainly leads to never a dull day.
Mm. How many companies are you taking a look at? I'm not even going to dare to ask a year, but how many do you take a close look at per quarter to find the gems? Because really what I'm hearing from you is that, you're interested in companies that are doing something different. Cauliflower being a great example of it, but you also have Barnana, which is dehydrated banana snacks that, is a great source for potassium because, with your goal to get into retail, you cannot possibly just come to the retailers with, oh, this is just a slightly different spin of the exact same thing that you already have five different versions of. So to some extent, I feel as if you're on a hunt here, right? You're looking for the unique stuff. So how what's that flow like? How do you narrow it down to actually whatever it is here? I don't know, dozens or hundreds you might look at and say, that's the one.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think at the end of the day, that differentiation is really one of the driving factors. Obviously, the people behind the business really matter as well. And this is a long-term relationship. We're trying to find entrepreneurs we want to be long-term partners with. I think you nailed it. I mean, the more differentiated a product is, the easier it is to gain distribution. And I think at the end of the day, the product still needs to taste great too. Consumers you know, literally want to have their cake and eat it too. And so if you can give them the ability to trade up without compromising on taste, that's normally a win-win. We make anywhere from 2 to 5 new investments a year. So not a lot, because we go pretty deep with our partners and we make a lot of follow-on investments into our brands as well. From that, we're looking at hundreds of deals a quarter, and it's a lot. I mean, when you walk through the grocery store, there's depending on the size of the store, anywhere from 30,000 to 100,000 SKUs. So there's quite a lot to pick from. Mm-hmm. But hopefully we're in areas and kind of thinking about trends that are maybe in earlier stages that are going to be developing and further, and we're obviously not always going to be right, so we try to stay pretty humble at the same time.
That's a lot of eating you're doing. I have to ask. I have to ask, and you can leave the brand name out. What's the weirdest product that's been pitched to you that you, I'm sure, had to eat as well?
there's a lot of really fascinating stuff. I mean, I guess on the one hand, it does classify as real innovation. On the other, it's a question of whether mainstream consumers are going to adopt something like this. I think there's obviously a lot of insect and protein products. I mean, that's something that comes to mind. But I do think there's a real story there. I think from a sustainability angle and that kind of thing, it's still in the very early innings. So I'm not totally dissing the category whatsoever. But that's something that's hard to make and sell at a farmer's market to get launched, for sure.
Right. Before we let you go, I wanted to ask you about the fulfillment fund. I know that it's something that's important to you, and you bring your experience and resources and network too. So tell us a little bit about the fulfillment fund and your involvement in that.
Sure. So the fulfillment fund, based here in LA, they really are focused on underprivileged youth and education. There's a really great mentor program, which is one of the I've been a mentor in the past. I'm not currently. And then they also have a leadership board, which I am part of, and which is all about just kind of raising awareness in addition to funds to support their mission of serving underprivileged youth in education. I think one of the things that I really love about the Fulfillment Fund is how disciplined they are from a return on investment standpoint and kind of how they think about every dollar. In a lot of ways, it's very similar to what I do in my day job with respect to stretching dollars and being very data-driven and analytical. And they've just been really effective in doing that over now 30 years. It's an organization that I was introduced to almost 15 years ago. It's been a really special one.
Outstanding. So I want to make sure that people know how they can learn more. So it's Boulder Food Group, and the website is bfgpartners.com. I'm sure folks can find you on LinkedIn as well. But I want to thank you for coming on the podcast, Dayton, educating us a little bit about some of those inner workings of a fund like yours and what you're looking for. And I think it's pretty cool, and encourage people to check out the portfolio of brands that you're investing in. It's quite an interesting mix, and I'm sure that diversity is only going to help you in the future as well. So thanks again for appearing.
No, thank you so much. Really appreciate you having me here, and that's the right address, and you can also reach me at Dayton@bfgpartners.com, which is my email address, and I'm on LinkedIn as well. So thanks again, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us on Just a Taste, a Chef's Best production. Join us again next time as we talk to more experts in marketing, retail, and production in the food and beverage industry. You can always visit us at chefsbest.com to learn more.